Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second.
I watched Alone last night on History. Guys, this is the most incredible show. You want to talk about people that are resilient, mentally tough, focused, driven. Any compliment you want to give them, maybe a little bit crazy, quite frankly. Look, here's what happens. There's five teams, so 10 people. And every one of these teams is very connected. You got a father, son, you got a married couple of brothers. They have 10 items that are going to allow them to survive. So each person gets five items, and then they get dropped in this remote location. So the very first thing they need to do, they got to mobilize. They have to find each other so that they have all 10 items that they need if they want to have any shot at survival. I mean, it's cold out there where they are this season. The other seasons of Alone, which were awesome, but quite frankly, they might as well be staying at the Ritz-Carlton compared to where they are this season. I mean, it's cold out there. They got the elements, they got the frustration, they got the boredom, they got the survival. Yeah, okay, fair enough. Set that aside. They got to deal with animals. They got wolves, they got coyotes out here. They are going to go, and they're going to give a winner. The winner, the winning team, gets $500,000. Great. Got to give them something. Got to have some kind of incentive for these crazy bastards, but listen to what they're doing. The way you win is you give up last. All the other teams give up till one team has survived the longest, has quite literally survived the longest. I've never seen anything like it. I really haven't. This is the fourth season. I wouldn't even compare the other three to this season. You guys got to check out Alone. It's on History. Now, how about we start the show?
He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, guys? Happy Friday. I'm glad we could meet again. You know, I'll tell you, if there's anything that pisses me off, and I've shared this with you guys before, but it's when I do an interview with somebody and they bury the interview. It either doesn't go well for the gentleman conducting the interview, or he holds himself in some lofty position where if I make him look a fool in his own mind, or maybe in reality, maybe I do make him look a fool. Sometimes they do deserve that. They'll come in and they'll hit you with something to let you know they didn't prep at all. That can get under your craw a little bit, in fairness. But I did a spot last week when I was in New York for a CBS affiliate, but it was a local affiliate to the New York market. I sang them a song, and they did not air the song because they thought it would hurt their people's feelings, which was the entire point of the song. Now, I'm not going to reenact it and redo it for you guys, but I am going to give you the first verse. Inspired by The Rock, the first verse goes like this. I'm leaving New York City. New York City, I must go. You got some fat ass women here and Chael's gonna just say no. Now, it picks up from there, but you guys can see where a beautiful chorus like that, a beautiful stanza of lyrics from a golden voice, you could see where I would want that to live. They killed it. About eight people in the room when I hit them with it, falling down in stitches. The song lasts for a couple of minutes. That's how we open, okay? They're falling down in stitches. They love the whole thing. And then they decide it's a good idea to not play it. Well, I don't love that. I don't love taking time off, going into a studio, glad-handed and pretending I'm happy to be there to look like a decent guy so I can come back next time I've got an agenda and having my work killed. I don't like it. Hey, you guys want to know something? Manny Pacquiao fights tomorrow. Manny Pacquiao fights tomorrow, and I found out on accident today. On accident, I clicked on some link while scrolling a completely different website that opened up a browser and took me to the fact that Manny Pacquiao fights some guy named Horn tomorrow. Not great. I happen to be a fight fan. I happen to be a boxing fan. I happen to be a Manny Pacquiao fan. Didn't know he was fighting tomorrow. The proof there, ladies and gentlemen, is boxing isn't enough. MMA isn't enough. Wrestling isn't enough. We have to have an accompanied narrative. I have to know why he's fighting tomorrow. I don't really care about the punches. He's only got two hands and he can throw them two places, the body and the head. That in of itself is not going to get me to watch it. It's not going to make me care about it. And it's damn sure not going to get me to buy it. I think I speak for all of us when I say that. I need to know why. Manny, why are you fighting this guy? Why are you fighting at all? He's independently wealthy. There's no ego on the line here. There's no personal dispute. There's no narrative, dialogue, or promotion whatsoever that I can speak to. If some of you knew he was fighting and you know the backstory, then you're way ahead of me. But I live in this world. I go to these websites. The boxing ones, the wrestling ones, the MMA ones, I check them all out. I'm up to speed. I didn't know he was fighting tomorrow. And I wonder how far you could carry that over. I've never given commentators much credit. Possibly they deserve it. I've just never given them much credit. But I would think even a basketball game, even a football game, if you had to watch it on mute, if you had to watch it silently, would you enjoy it as much? And I think the answer is probably no. It's probably no. That dialogue is so important. That narrative is so important. That play-by-play and that explanation is so important. So Pacquiao, good luck. His opponent, Horn, good luck. I don't know where you guys are fighting or why you're fighting, but you are fighting tomorrow. The numbers for Andre Ward and Sergey Kovalev, that big rematch, the numbers came in, and they were terrible. And this was a rematch. The rematch historically always does better than the first. Always. It just works that way. These guys fought in the same city of Las Vegas. The live attendance was abysmal compared to the first one. And the pay-per-view was cut down by like 24%. 24% less for the rematch than the first one. Now, the first one didn't do great. I didn't have any idea why these guys were rematching. But that's just what they decided to do. But there was no promotion. There was no narrative. And you can sit there as an enthusiast and tell me these are the two best guys in the world. But I can tell you as a wrestling fan, I'm talking amateur wrestling, I fully understand why people don't come. I do fully understand that it's not built up and the narrative isn't there. Now, wrestling is in a totally different situation as prize fighting. Wrestling, largely, and all of the big events are done in a tournament format. So you don't have the ability to promote a match because you don't know what matches are going to take place. The brackets can fall apart. Guys got to win 4 and 5 and 6 matches in one day. Well, if either guy that you want to see and you anticipate to see in the finals falls apart in rounds 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5, you're not going to get that sixth match. So it's very hard to promote. But when you take two guys in a combat sport, I know I'm saying Kovalev wrong, or whoever Ward's opponent was. Sergey. We'll call him Sergey. I got that part right. When Ward and Sergey are going to fight, the boxing's not enough. In fact, the boxing is the worst part. It's the absolute worst part. I mean, God, it's 36 minutes. There's nothing in the world I want to do aside from sleep that's 36 minutes. I love chocolate cake, guys. I don't want to eat chocolate cake for 36 minutes. It's called the law of diminishing marginal utility, meaning too much of a thing is no longer a good thing. So I got to go watch these guys. They might be boxing for 36 minutes. All I want is the outcome. We've got the conflict. Now, the only thing we got to get to is the resolution of the conflict. I got to wait over a half hour? And you're going to take a minute off, and 50 minutes to get to the resolution? This is a court case. Are you kidding me? A jury could reach a verdict faster than that. Punching a guy with your left hand and your right hand in his body and in his head is not enough. It's not enough. There has to be promotion. There has to be a narrative, and I have to know why you guys are fighting. I think they had an opportunity to tell us that story. Whenever you have a first match, one of the reasons that the rematch does so well, the visuals that you now have, we no longer have to guess. I no longer have to show you the audience B-roll of a guy punching mitts in some dirty gym somewhere or out in a sweatsuit with some tennis shoes on running on the road with his Walkman going. I don't have to do that. Now I get to actually show you clips of the first fight. That's pretty compelling. I get to show you what each guy did. If there's any controversy, I get to tell that story. There's all sorts of things that a promoter gets to do in a rematch that helps to make it more successful than the first match. And it wasn't done here. This was promoted by a company called Rock Nation. I don't know the damn thing about these guys. I don't wish them bad. I don't wish them well. I don't know anything. I'm told that Jay-Z, the famous artist, Beyonce's husband, I'm told that Jay-Z owns that company. If he does, he needs to make some changes. I would think a guy like Jay-Z could get a word out there. He didn't even get the word out there that he was promoting this fight, let alone who was fighting or where and when. And none of this is meant to be an insult. I don't want to insult guys for going out and trying and risking stuff and not working. I'm just saying there's a lesson here that we can all learn from. The promotion is everything. Guys, I have been at press conferences. I have been at press conferences where somebody takes the microphone. I mean, I don't even, this probably happened to me 5 or 6 times out of 7 or 8 press conferences. Somebody takes the microphone and then simply says, I think there's too much talking. I didn't come here to talk. You ever heard that one? I didn't come here to talk. You didn't come here to talk. It's a press conference. It's literally the only thing that you can do. This is where you get people interested so that people watch you fight. Would you rather go out in a parking lot and prove your point, but then nobody ever sees it? There's no revenue. There's no sponsors. There's no incentive. Would you rather do that? You get these old veterans of the sport that come out when their career's over and say, well, this is about entertainment. What? Thank you, Sherlock. Yes, it's about entertainment. Yes, it is. The business does not run on the punches alone. The business runs on the narrative, on the meaningfulness. Why are you fighting? And sometimes, you guys, you want to know what? Sometimes there isn't an answer. And sometimes you've got to hold shows for people like me from an amateur wrestling fan standpoint that's just going to watch because he just happens to really like the sport. But during that show, it's incumbent upon you to build the next show. So if you've got a flop where you don't have a narrative, you don't have anything compelling, you don't have anything interesting or a reason to do it, the show must go on. You're gonna set up the ring. You're going to bring in the athletes. You're going to pop the popcorn. But then you use that as a springboard to make sure the next one does have a narrative, a reason, and a promotion that people can find compelling and or interesting. I've seen too many fighters come. And it doesn't seem to matter how many times you attempt to tell them second one fight ends, the marketing for the next fight begins. It doesn't seem to matter how many times you spell that out. They just don't get it. It doesn't seem to matter to some promoter. I don't know who Rock Nation is. I can just tell you fight promotion is tough to get into. And it's not by the book. It's just not by the book. There's a reason in boxing you got 3 or 4 guys. There's a reason in MMA you got 2 guys that can run these companies. There is no library in the world that you can go in and check out a book on fight promotion. There's no college, state, or university in the world where you can major in fight promotion. You either get it or you don't. It's a very rare thing to understand. And if you try to do it by the book, investor short the stock. It's a street smart, hustling, hardworking, psychological business. The promotion is the most important thing. The punches and the kicks do not work on their own. The grappling and the chokes and the arm bars, they don't work on their own. Fighting had been around way before the UFC or Bellator were either acronyms or a word. Way before. But nobody watched. Why? They were punching and kicking back then. They were grappling and trying to stretch each other out back then. Promotion. Storylines. Entertainment. If you don't have those three things, you have no shot of being compelling or interesting. If you took two mortal enemies, okay, I always tell you guys, nothing sells like conflict. From a business standpoint, nothing sells like a personal feud. But you don't have a lot of those. That's just not real. I mean, could you imagine if it was? Who wants to walk around life having a guy out there that's an enemy? That'd be no fun. It's a pretty rare thing. But let's say you had it. Let's say you had two mortal enemies. If nobody knows they're enemies, it doesn't count. It's the tree falling in the woods. If nobody's there to hear, it doesn't make a sound. It's the same thing. You have to have a promotion. You have to have a narrative. You have to show up to press conferences and talk. I caught a press conference. It was for International Fight Week coming up. We're right on top of it here, a week away. I can't remember who it was. I wish I could remember. But one of the girls flew in from a foreign country. She had to get a visa and a passport and go through the checks and balances and catch flights from here to this hub to another flight here, be jet lag, go through the whole thing, had her dress and her hair and her makeup, and she came out in Las Vegas and she sat down and she said, "I'm not here to talk." It's quite literally the only reason you're here. Quite literally. And then I'll see somebody uncover this. You guys remember the day Jose Aldo, great fighter, champion, hadn't lost in forever, the day that this got revealed to him that, oh my gosh, I have to do more than just go out and punch someone and kick someone to make people be interested in me. Remember that day? And he went on like this media tour telling everybody the only reason people care about Conor, and then he would state all the things that Conor did. Well, he was completely right. It was his premise that was wrong. His premise was that somehow people shouldn't like that about Conor, or that Conor shouldn't be a main event because all that he's done so far has got people interested in him, or that Conor shouldn't get the sponsors because he gets the most media and the most interviews. His points were spot on. I was a little disappointed that a 12-year veteran of the sport, and nobody ever pulled him aside and told him this. I was a little disappointed that a 12-year veteran of the sport had never opened his eyes and realized it on his own. But there's nothing I could do. And you keep seeing fighters do this. They keep coming. It doesn't seem to matter how many times this happens, how many times we talk about it here. I know you guys understand. I tell you guys this stuff, and you probably didn't even need me to tell you. Most of you just got it. Most of you know, yeah, I want to see two people fight. That I know. Two people that I recognize, two people that I respect, two people that I'm invested in going on the journey with. You know that about yourself. So why don't these fighters know it? Now, you could do what Vince McMahon does. You could pull these guys aside. Look, you go into the room to the left, you go into the room to the right. There's going to be speechwriters in there. He's going to tell you what to say. He's going to tell you what to say. Here's how we're going to work it out. You could do that in fighting, but the second you do, you lose all of the integrity. Now you just became pro wrestling. You could do it behind the scenes. You could go work it out, but you can't trust a fighter. The fighters will turn on their own damn product. There was a couple of guys, they got fired. They got fired from the UFC. They were going around, they were doing videos. Can't even remember what the shows were. This was so long ago. 2003. Maybe 2004. So long ago, I can't remember what the shows were called, but essentially like the prime times and the countdowns. And these gentlemen that were running the cameras wanted to make sure that their pieces were hot. So they told the fighters a couple of lines to say, "Hey, say this, and I'll cut it up and get a little back and forth, and I'll make sure he says something, and I'll tie it all together." Well, they did it, and it turned out, and it worked really great. In fact, BJ Penn was involved in one of those. And everybody hated what BJ said, even though it worked, even though it got attention, even though here we are in 2017, and I still remember it because it was effective and created an emotion. BJ Penn didn't like that other people told him that they didn't like that he said that, so he comes out and he just told the truth, which was, well, hey, that guy was in charge, and he told me to say it. Well, now BJ just turned on the goddamn product. He just turned on the product. He did it as a way of defending himself, but he hurt the product. It's like, BJ, that wasn't real anyway. None of it was real. The only thing real is the numbers, the live gate and how many people watched. What did you get paid? Get your bag and go home. That's the only thing. But it bothered him. It hurt his feelings. I'm not picking on BJ Penn at all. I'm just, I use this as an example because you guys would know BJ Penn. You'd respect BJ Penn. That guy was fired. The entire policy had changed. And then one other guy came along. And again, it was a long time, call it a decade, very long time ago, maybe even a little bit more, 2006-ish. And I do know who this guy was. I actually really liked him. And I had worked with him some, and he did the same thing to me. Hey, say this. And so I know a little of that did go on, and some other fighter outed him. Well, hey, I only did that because they told me. Then they edited it, and I looked like a jerk. Who cares? Who cares if you looked like a jerk? Was it a good line? But this is the problem with fighters. This is why you can't pull them aside and go, look, here's the storyline, do this. There's a reason you can't do that. They'll turn on their own product. They get their feelings hurt. They don't understand. This is a sport, that's true, but this is a business first and foremost. Wrestlers do get that. Now, I understand that the fourth curtain's been revealed and we all are in on the gag. These two guys are out there cooperating with one another, not offering each other resistance in a competitive format. But it is still their job to make us buy it. And before the fourth curtain was revealed, these guys stuck to it. These carnies, these wrestlers, these shooters, these workers, they all stuck to something called kayfabe. Kayfabe was the term for meant you live the gimmick at all times. If it works out for you or it works out for the other guy. Whether he's putting me over or whether I'm doing the job tonight and I'm putting him over, we're all in the same business. We don't ever turn on the business, and I play the character at all times. It's the only reason wrestling was able to work, because those guys understood the psychology and they understood they're filling up a house together. That arena is going to get full because of everybody's contribution. The guys in MMA, they don't understand that. You get a guy in MMA, sells out a house, he's the main event, he'll go in the back room with one of the bosses and try to take all the money home for himself. He didn't want to spread it around. Why was the main event? Well, okay, but the rest of the guys were carpenters. Maybe they couldn't draw you the house, but they sure helped you build it. Guys, have you been over to MeUndies yet? Have you got yourself some new underwear? Go to MeUndies.com/Chael right now. You're going to save 20% off. I'm telling you, this is the most comfortable underwear you will have ever put on. It's made from some kind of a material called micromodal. All I can tell you about micromodal is I would hit it at about 3 times softer than cotton. With zero exaggeration. I would love your guys' opinion. Definitely softer than cotton. I hit it about 3 times softer. I really believe this. Unless you're naked or you're wearing a swimsuit, for every other minute of your life, you're going to want to be in MeUndies. They are that comfortable. And if you're used to buying packs of uncomfortable, boring underwear that only come in white and gray and black and tan, MeUndies is going to change everything because MeUndies comes in all kinds of colors and patterns. They've got a new release, limited edition pattern. This comes out every single month and they always sell out. This month is called Rainbow Confetti. The print is called Celebrate. If you want to go over to MeUndies.com and look it up, it's called Celebrate. But it's a rainbow confetti print. They're wild. They're fun. Go check them out. This is what I use to weigh in. I wear them all the time, but I always wear them to weigh in because they're so light. And I don't want the scale to reflect anything. These guys have sold over 5 million pair. If you guys go to MeUndies.com/Chael right now, order yourself some underwear. And if you don't like them, here's the deal. And this is for my listeners, a 100% guarantee. If you don't like them, they're free. Yeah, that's right. They're free. That's how confident I am that you guys are going to love this product. MeUndies.com/Chael.
Adam Carolla's motivational podcast, Take a Knee, is a part of Podcast One Premium. But you can hear a very special episode with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar now for free at podcastone.com.
How much do you think that discipline has affected your life and helped you in further endeavors after
sports? It's helped me a lot because, you know, when you get to a point when you can look back, all the times that I failed had to do with my own laziness and arrogance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And when you get humble and understand that you got to work for it and earn it, you get things done.
To subscribe and get a new episode of Take a Knee each week, go to podcastone.com/premium.
You're welcome. You're welcome with Chael Sonnen.
So I came across something interesting. I think this started, about 2 days ago. BJ Penn had a fight over the weekend. I don't know where to dig into this story. So if I jump around a little bit, guys, just connect the dots here. Work with me a little bit. Maybe I should start here. BJ Penn and Nick Lentz have had some kind of a feud for a meaningful period of time. You guys might remember last year, Nick Lentz was coming on here. And he was dropping poems. And they always had to do with BJ Penn. I think he was trying to get a fight going. I think the backstory was like Lentz trained with BJ one day out in Hawaii. Everything was cool in the gang. They're getting along. BJ does something. Nick cuts his eye. I mean, it was something like this. Maybe it was vice versa. But something happened in the training session. Who knows where things went from there. But all of a sudden, Lentz wants to fight BJ. Okay, fine. Well, that kind of gets left behind. That didn't gain much traction. The fight never took place. BJ might have even left the weight class. Lentz is a 55-pounder. BJ is a 45-pounder. Came back to fight Frankie. You guys remember that whole thing? So Lentz was inserting himself somewhere in there, and it didn't work out. So BJ fought over the weekend, and he got beat. And that represented his fifth consecutive loss. So while you're sitting here wondering, hey, what, you know, what do we do from here? Well, Lentz is still going, hey, I don't care how many you've lost. I've been trying to put myself in this line back before you had lost any. Back when you were on a winning streak, I was trying to be the guy, and I'm not done with you yet. That was Lentz's stance. Okay, fine. So he does something a couple of days ago, and he says that BJ has become either a walking punchline or a walking punching bag. And, okay, fine. Again, Nick is inserting himself. But I do think the backstory there, see, if all you heard was that Nick said that when BJ had lost five in a row, you might be going, well, Nick, you know, kick a guy while he's down. I don't know what I think about that. But when you understand the backstory, that Nick has actually been poking the bear before any of the slide happened. They have some kind of a backstory from the gym. Nick didn't really care if he was the favorite, the underdog. BJ was going to beat him. He was going to beat BJ. He just wanted to go fight him. When you understand that, maybe it'll change your mind on that. So Nick goes out, he calls him the walking punching bag or line. And so Ben Foulkes, do you guys know who Ben Foulkes is? Ben Foulkes is a former MMA journalist. And I'm glad that he's former because, just in fairness, he should not be an MMA journalist. But because he's not a journalist. He's not objective in the slightest, and he's not factually correct, but he's still got a place. He can just do opinion pieces. He can do blogs and opinion pieces and op-eds, and he does, and they're rather entertaining. He's actually rather good at it. But now we don't have to be pissed off at him because he's openly saying, just an op-ed. Okay, good enough. Well, he does one on Nick Lentz, and he essentially says, hey, Nick, you know, who are you to talk about a legend like this? BJ Penn's been to the top, and maybe he's not there anymore, but you've never even been there. How dare you speak these words about BJ? And that was kind of Ben's stance. I'm definitely summarizing, no verbatim there, no quotes there, but you get the gist. Okay. All right. Well, I like this, right? I like a little back and forth. Even if Foulkes has nothing to do with this, he inserted himself, fine, you want to play, let's play. So Nick Lentz responds. Now, this I did appreciate. I thought this was pretty good. Nick Lentz was going to call in, and he put this article out. I can't remember where this article was, so I got a hold of Nick, and I said, hey, I read what you put out online. Why don't you come on the show? I sent him an email. I said, why don't you come on the show and read it? And he goes, man, I'd love to. I got my kid with me. We're in a car, and I don't think it'd be quiet enough. So he sent it over to me for me to read. But I think you guys might enjoy this. So, again, this is Nick Lentz responding to Ben Foulkes, who inserted himself in this when Nick made comments about BJ Penn. All right, you're up to speed. Ben, good morning. How are you? Just a quick dialogue from your comrade at arms, Lentzy boy, down here in the Sunshine State. Sent a little sunshine your way this fine morning. How was breakfast today? What'd you have? I'm guessing you ate a little bit more of corpse of BJ Penn's career. You'll keep gnawing away on that as long as it's on the menu, and eating it makes money shoot out of your ass. How'd you take it? Over easy, sunny side up? Never mind. I know how you had it. Scrambled. Yes, sir. Scrambled, fried. Easy to chew up, wolf down, and move on from. A few things you might want to consider while you're eating this morning. I didn't call BJ Penn out. He called me out. In the course of stiffing Mike Dolce for $21,000 and also blaming Dolce for one of his losses, the legend, BJ Penn, chose to take a few pot shots at your old pal Lentzy boy. Apex predator that he is, he perceived me as a small fish that would swallow for laughs on his way to attack Dolce from behind in the shadows. That small fish, however, has gotten stuck sideways in his throat now, and he can't swallow it, and he can't spit it out. It's slowly drowning him. This entire cycle of events, the ridicule, the blatant disrespect, the poems, the tweets mocking his every disaster, the creator of that scenario, the architect, is none other than Baby J himself. He chose to engage me. He chose to include me in a scenario he stole from one of his well-meaning coaches and included me in the detail to muddy the moral waters and hide in the murk. A few moments' research will make all of this clear to you. My ongoing efforts since day one have been based upon BJ's best interests, unlike yours, and all of your fawning fanboys who toss the phrase legend around relentlessly. As the poor deluded fool takes ass whooping after ass whooping, I told him, you can fight me at 145. Your body can't handle it. The guys down there are too fast. They're going to touch you up at will, and your brain doesn't have enough cushion at 145 pounds. But you have a legit beef with old Lentzy boy, and you want to fight, so let's do it. But let's do it at 155, which is a better, safer, and wiser weight for both of us at this stage of our lives and our careers. I'm years younger and in much better shape, and I know 155 is where I belong. He should have listened to me. I acknowledge, back then, a fight with BJ had very limited value at my career's trajectory. I suggested it at 155 pounds as a way of motivating him to accept certain realities, give the fans an interesting fight, and give him a chance to conclude his career like a warrior in front of his home crowd in Hawaii. BJ chose a different path. Instead of fighting in Hawaii against me in a fight that he would have been motivated for, he went to his loyal fan base to rally behind him and defend his honor at a weight class that was way more risky and made way less sense. And he chose to fight Frankie Edgar at 145. Instead of me pointing out these things, you call it piling on or kicking him while he's down. They are simply stating the obvious and drawing upon the easily verifiable statements I've made over the past few years. A few related observations. Werewolf, Robin Hood, and Lady Godiva are legends. BJ Penn is a human being whose actions have consequences, whose decisions affect not only himself but others, most notably his kids, and whose behaviors can be criticized even in the form of ridicule. Calling him or any fighter a legend disconnects them from the three facts of their humanity that I have alluded above. This is dangerous in the long term for his well-being. You, by calling him a legend and chastising me, makes you a willing accomplice and enabler in his current career death spiral. Congratulations, Ben. You don't have to be a fighter to write about fighting, but it would help if you were a good writer or a journalist. You, my friend, are neither. Unlike guys like Mendenhall, who is the best writer in MMA hands down, or a busted-out wretch like Ramondi, who at least used to have a job in sports journalism, or a shrewd, carpet-bagging, opportunistic fraud like Helwani, who got a degree in journalism but can't form a complete thought or sentence. You are a blogger, a fanboy. Your views are hopelessly biased in favor of your heroes. At its fundamental level, your involvement in MMA is based upon finding a way to monetize your obsessions. Because of that, you have no legitimate imprint or signature. And because of that, you spend time accusing me of doing what you actually do, profiting off a man, Baby J, in this case, legendary status, slow motion suicide for your moment of attention. Not old Lindsay boy, who tried to help and offered realistic, wise alternatives to the neurological holocaust that is Baby J's imminent future. Oh, and one last thing. Your V-blog. You got problems there, fella. In the horrid flannel shirt, unshaven, pale, pasty, Halloween into the iPhone, mustard color, dingy walls in the background. You look like a freaking Ed Gein, fella. If you're going for backwards serial killer as your look, you've got it nailed. But if you don't want the mailman silently praying that you aren't going to turn him in to a human kielbasa every time he trudges up your driveway, you might want to spruce up the walls, run a shaver over that mustache, and get a clean pair, normal color polo, like Old Navy or something. Just a little well-meaning advice mixed with some humor for you from your old pal, kind of like I've been giving BJ. Good luck with your blog. I'll be on the lookout for you at the next Fan Expo, where you'll be clutching a hard illustrated comic book and wearing BJ pin ears you made out of your kid's silly putty. Best always, Nick the Carney Lentz. All right. You guys know what? I hate reading. Can I tell you that? I hate reading out loud, I should say. It gave me memories of being in school when the teacher would call on me. Thank you for mustering through that. But I have to tell you, from a form of pure entertainment, purely from an entertainment aspect, that was pretty damn good. That was pretty damn good. And I don't think anybody gets busted up there. Obviously, Folks took the way, but I know Ben Folks, and he's a smart guy. And he's not afraid of a little back and forth like this, and I trust that Ben Folks will be challenging. When he does, I will bring you up to speed, and when Nick responds to that, we'll check in on that scenario as well. Guys, if you're looking for a car, I don't care if it's new or used, do it with TrueCar. If you're at a desktop, www.truecar.com. If you're at a smartphone, you're probably listening to the show on a smartphone right now. Just go into your search engine, type in TrueCar, and download the app. When you're looking for a car, again, brand new or only new to you, type in the kind of car you want. Year, make, model, color. Type in your zip code. It will tell you what you people in your area paid for that exact same car. Most people are saving almost $4,000 off of the MSRP. At that point, you will be connected with a TrueCar certified dealer. There is over 11,000 of them in this country. You will work everything out with them so that when you show up at the lot, not only is the car there, but you know exactly how much you're paying. No more falling in love with an ad, showing up at the dealership, spending all day, sometimes a weekend, 2 days down there, and leaving in a stripped down version of your dream car at twice the monthly payment. Those days are gone. Save time, True Car. Now, get out there, enjoy your weekend, regardless of the holidays. We're going to have three shows next week. It's going to be a lot of fun. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Hey guys, it's Richard Blaze.
And I'm Jasmine Blaze.
Join us every week for our show on Podcast One called Starving for Attention.
We're talking to anyone and everyone in the culinary industry.
We're going
to
hear some spontaneous back-of-house conversation about what it takes to make it in different parts of the food business, global trends, and where the industry overlaps with entertainment.
And play along with our games, trivia, and wacky moments.
Pull up a seat every Tuesday on PodcastOne.com, the new Podcast One app, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts.